Welcome to Making Sheffield, celebrating the Steel City's history and heritage. Our guest today is local historian Ron Clayton.
Well, it's all about the growing industrialisation, the growing urbanisation of 19th century Sheffield. And of course they talk about the good old days. Well, they weren't good old days. A horrible early mortality rate for children, diseases, shocking living conditions, poor wages, no such thing as a welfare state, never even been thought of, and a big gap between master and men, of course. And Sheffield industry, the little mesters, the little masters, you know, they did their own little thing in their own little workshop. The Loxley Valley itself, which technically extends from just below Dam Flask, right down to where it joins the Don at Penistone Road. And of course, what they wanted was a supply of water to feed industry and also, you know, the folk of Sheffield, because it's growing Sheffield. And they constructed the dams up at Dale Dyke. And of course, 19th century, the Victorians are very, very good at engineering. Nothing's too big for them to tackle. But of course, they didn't have the technology and the equipment of today. Why the dam collapsed is still a bit of an enigma. Various scientific groups and academics have looked at it in recent years, and they have a better idea, but to say they know exactly why, still debatable. So anyhow, if you can imagine the wild, windswept landscapes of northwest Sheffield, down Bradfield Dale, and the little scattered settlements, you know, with the workshops, the cottages and the occasional big house, but obviously not clustered together. What is remarkable about the aftermath of the flood is that all the way from Bradfield, even into the centre of town, you can still find buildings that survived the flood or were there at the time of the flood. And of course, there's a memorial down at Mill Sounds near my old office at the UKBA, which is, you know, every March I always go down and get one or two descendants and relatives, some of which who still live in the area of Mailing Bridge, and we go down and we lay some flowers on the memorial, because it's a quintessential part of Sheffield history and it shouldn't be forgot. And of course the memorial, the original memorial, is just up the road in St Polycarp's Church. But anyhow, going back to what happened on the 11th of March, it was a dark and stormy night. High winds, gales and a lot of rain. And a fella called Horsfield, who were a labourer, walked over the top of the embankment and he noticed a small crack. And he discussed it with fellow workmen. And of course they sent a young man called Stevenson Fountain on a horse ride down to Division Street to warn John Gunson, who was the engineer. And of course where he lived, it's just outside of Lloyd's Number 1, which was the old Sheffield Waterworks office. So anyhow, on the way down, his horse broke a girth, a part of the, you know, the trappings of the horse. And he stopped off at Dam Flask, and in those days Dam Flask was a little hamlet. Don't exist now because the reservoir's there. And they were talking, there were a crack at Dam, and of course some of the locals got wind of this, some of them ignored it, some carried on working and lost their lives. But others were a bit wary, and they moved their families out, and they moved their sheep up onto the higher ground. So of course he gallops off to Division Street to knock up Mr. Gunston, and of course the folk in Mailing Bridge by this time, you know, they're either in the pubs or they settle down for a night's sleep, and it's a dark and it's a stormy night, and it's a very dramatic part of the flood story, because Gunston comes from his home, rattles up Langsett Road past the barracks, you know, in his little horse and gig. And of course the sentry at the gates of the barracks would think, well, who's this at this time of night? Because it's getting, I suppose, getting to about 10 o'clock, something like that. So he gets up to the dam and he sees the crack, and of course it's widened. So they try and blow some drainage space up with gunpowder, and the gunpowder's wet. So, you know, you can see because the water's lapping up at the top of the embankment. And of course, he goes down to, I think, the valve house, or whatever they call it, to try and release some water. And all of a sudden, one at workman shouts, and Gunson jumps out of way just in time because the embankment goes. And Gunson could have been the first victim of the flood. The first victim, as far as I know, is a young baby in Low Bradfield. But of course, once it goes, there's millions of gallons of water going down that valley. And as somebody said, you know, a racehorse couldn't have got in front of it. And it was going down like a train. And of course, anything in its path, wallop, went down. And if it's coming down that valley, and it's foaming. It's foaming at the top. A lot of devastation at Low Bradfield, and a baby was washed away, but I think there's a bit of doubt about that now. But anyway, it goes battering down the Loxley Valley through Little Matlock, demolishes Chapman's house, drowns a few people there, drowns one or two workmen who are working late at Stores Lane there. And it smashes into Mailing Bridge, and nobody knows out about it because they're not being warned. A lot of them are in bed, and they're swept into eternity, as the Victorians put it. There's 102 people killed in here, which is why I refer to it as Ground Zero, because there's no other part of the path of the flood where there's so many people killed than Mailing Bridge. And of course, there's some famous and rather dramatic stories. Bottomer, Stannington Road, near where they're building a new supermarket, that was Farmer Trickett's house. Trickett was a wealthy man, probably the wealthiest bloke that died in the flood. They got one or two relatives and servants, and of course, they've no idea what's coming. The last thing they heard on this earth was this tremendous roar. And there's a story about a candle suddenly appearing in the window, and then wallop, the house goes. I think Mrs. Trickett was found at Rotherham. She was swept that far. Mr. Trickett ended up in the workhouse at Kelham Island, where the inmates who'd been lucky themselves, you know, washing the body for interment. And the valley at this moment, as it comes into Mailing Bridge, was a lot steeper than it is these days, because it's been levelled out a bit by dumping stuff down there. And of course, the steeper the valley, the more velocity it comes. So it destroys Trickett's farm. The interesting thing about Trickett Farm is now on Stannington Road, Forge Farm, the dental surgeon, is there. The barn that's associated with that, when it were a farm, some reckon it's the only surviving bit of Trickett's farm, but I'm not so sure myself. If you look at the photographs, there's a bit of a difference. And of course, with Trickett being wealthy, the day after the flood, they had to put police up there and soldiers from the barracks to stop any looting. It smashes down two pubs, the Cleacom, which was on this site, where we are now, and across the road, the Stag Inn. Cleacom is a funny, it's an old obsolete Yorkshire word, and it means to snatch at. And you can imagine these lads and the parch, they've been in dust, and then you get a big pint of foam in here, and it goes down without touching sides. The Bisbee family and the Armitage family, I forget which one owned it, I think Bisbee owned the Cleacom, but they were all wiped out. Simply, they were in bed, they didn't know what happened, swept into eternity. You lost something like 20 houses up here, round here, which are only a small village, a few hundred, some workshops. And of course, it goes careering down Home Lane, batters the Mason's Arms at bottom of Walkley Lane, batters the Hillsborough Inn, which is where the coffee shop is now in Hillsborough Corner, and smashes up does some damage to the Shakespeare, which is still there, and of course the Blue Ball. The Blue Ball went about 3 years ago, and it was a curious building. The middle bit went back to something like 1820. And it was curious because it stood at an angle from Bradfield Road, because that was all in Village Green. Because it's like hotels, people say, well, Bradfield Road is Hillsborough. Well, it is these days, but originally it was the Manor of Allington. which was a lot older place and had its own manor house until 1930. And from there on, it slowed down, but it spreads out a bit because, you know, you've got a wider valley there. And eventually, what's it do? Well, it makes the waters rise at Doncaster at the Don, washes people up into Rotherham. But I think the last person that's killed in Sheffield is a guy that's in Victoria Station working, but we think you're actually sleeping. And of course, he never woke up. You can't imagine it, because if you went there now and looked over at the Locksley, apart from where the weir is to make the water move faster and turn the wheel to, you know, and stuff like that, you can't imagine such a quiet, relatively shallow water doing what it did. But of course, you've got millions of gallons of water rushing down there. It's carrying great boulders, it's carrying dead people, dead animals, bits of structure. Trickett's house basically was carried away, quite carried for a few feet intact before it just crumbled. And you cannot imagine it now. If you look down now, I mean, when we had the floods in 2007, people were fascinated. If you anywhere in Sheffield, Essex, people will walk past the bridge and it's automatic. They'll look over at river. And arguably, you can't imagine it, but nights, the thunder, the roar, no wonder Paymaster Sergeant Foles thought it was the end of the world, Nick. It must have seemed like that to a lot of people. I mean, arguably, the Locksley Valley, as I say, continues into Penistone Road. You know, you look at that sleepy little stream now and you can't think of what it was like. But if you look back to 2007, that water rises quickly and it thunders over the weirs. So it's unimaginable, unimaginable. Drama, tragedy, fear, unbelievable. Some of the escapes are quite interesting. There's a guy, a tailor in Hillsborough, who escapes by jumping into a cupboard. And he's floating about, you know, afterwards. There's where the Mason's Arms is. Everybody in that pub, which were demolished practically, were killed apart from a young girl who were asleep in the attic, and she survived. But as I said, there were whole families wiped up here. The original memorial to it is in St Polycarp's Church, and that was put up not long after the flood, and that's had a checkered life. It were originally in the motor repair shop that is on bottom of Wisewood Lane. Then it went to St Mark's up Dykes Lane, and then it came down to St Polycarp's, and it's a treasured memento. And as you can see, there's at least two families wiped out there. And of course, the flood is such an epic disaster. Recent babes, recent infants are drowned. And also the old folks that are surviving, they're drowned and stuff like that. And the drama and the pathos and the tragedy of it. And of course, because there's a lot of records, people like Jenny Lightowler and Malcolm Nunn, and my old mate Mick Drury, I'll do a plug for his book, The Inundation, which is very detailed, and he looks at the people who were killed in the flood. And of course, there's the other business about the claims. You know, the Bishop of Hawaii had got a claim in for some property he owned, and it's amazing when you look at it, as Mick Drury points out, what value was put on the life of a member of the working classes and stuff like that, and how poor some of the losses were. You know, you put in for dead livestock, for potatoes, for, you know, beer supplies, your tools, and when you look at what they actually paid out in compensation, the water company, it's very illustrative of social conditions in those days. You know, when you're going about, oh, the good old days, Victorian values, I thought, cholera. And yet you can imagine what it was like, because, you know, earth privies and stuff like that, and dead bodies, animals, as well as human beings. And, you know, one of the first things is we've got loads of quicklime. Otherwise, you would have had an epidemic disease. Not as bad as the one we're labouring under at the moment, but bad enough. 240 people, some of which were never identified. But in actual fact, a lady called Jenny Lightowler has done a lot of work on that and identified one or two interesting facts. And if you look up the memorial at Mill Sands, there's a lot more people added on there because they swallowed water. There's a police inspector at Hillsborough who got pneumonia, I think, or swallowed some filthy water, and he'd been labouring all night. I mean, the police come out of it very well. The chief constable at the time, John Jackson, is a hero. He's on his horse next morning. He's riding about, directing everything. And of course, the great and the good of the town come together and have a whip round for folks. Because I mean, some of these people are destitute. They've barely any clothes on. They've no accommodation anymore. They've lost the tools. They've lost the way of making a living. What is remarkable, going back to Loxley, the Loxley area, is it comes to life fairly quickly. A lot of the works are rebuilt, and at one time you could say the Loxley Valley had got the largest amount of surviving archaeology of any valley in Sheffield. And of course, sadly, we don't always appreciate it in this town. You see, the thing about the pubs, a lot of them were used for coroner's inquests. Some were used as mortuaries. Up the road at the former yew tree, they found about four bodies in the backyard, and now it's the Loxley, which is quite an appropriate name, being in what we call Loxley Bottoms and Mailing Bridge. Again, they were used as temporary mortuaries, or they had an inquest. You know, because you're finding people in the mud and you don't know who they are. Sometimes they're mutilated. Horrible, horrible rescue operation. And if you think about it, you haven't got any emergency service in those days, apart from the army and the police force. Shocking scenario afterwards. But, you know, Sheffield as a city, it's a survivor. It has to be. You know, we saw it with the steel, we saw it with the coal, and we're in this brave new world now. We turn into a city of sport, and thank God we are, because one thing that amazes me now, when I do talks to students and stuff like that, I'm amazed where they come from. The flood is very much like the Blitz, and I know you've been talking to my mate Neil Anderson about the Blitz, and of course they're both intrinsic parts of the social history of Sheffield. And there's a lot of stuff we'll never know about the Blitz and about the flood. And of course, they're buried everywhere. You can go up to Wadsley Churchyard, you can go to Ward's End Cemetery, you can go to Bradfield, you can go Penistone, whatever. And you can find flood victims buried there. And of course, sadly, some of them are in unmarked graves. Down at Hillsborough Barracks, Pay Master Sergeant Falls, he got a boy and a girl, and he were in the married quarters, which is roughly where McDonald's is now. And of course, he were woke up by the sound of the water, and he actually thought the world was ending. And him and his missus got out of the living quarters, but the water rushed in so fast it slammed the door behind them. And next morning, when they were a search party, they found his son and daughter drowned in their living accommodation, and they're in Ward's End Cemetery. And sadly, unmarked graves. But we've got the Armitage family in there, in one big grave, wiped out. There's a lot of fantastic sort of sources for it. There's Mick Armitage, I think there's some connection there with the family. He's got a wonderful website called The Great Flood, and that has a theme song by the Bee Gees, New York Mining Disaster, 1941, which I think is a very, very appropriate tune. The one of the things about it, of course, is the photographs afterwards, because people were coming on excursion trains from Manchester, the photographers with their cumbersome equipment, you know, and they're taking photographs. And, you know, it's what they call disaster tourism, you know what I mean? We're a bit ghoulish. And stuff like that. And as a result of the flood, there's various things have handed over to Sheffield museums. There's a little battledoor bat, which is a Victorian game with a wooden racket thing. And they found that either at Mailing Bridge or at Hillsborough Corner the day after the flood. And the family kept it in their generations for years, but they would never let the kids play with it because of the bad luck. So that's in Kelham Island Museum of Western Park. There's Bibles. There's a brass collar to a dog called Rolo, who supposedly saved a child's life, though there's no definite record of that. I've seen all sorts of stuff. There were a print of a German book showing the Great Eastern, which was found in the ruins of a house on Was it near Ladies Bridge or not Bow Street? We found another way into town. And of course, if you think about it, if you said to me, what were it like? If you imagine Ladies Bridge, in 2007, the Bobbies were keeping people away from there because they thought it might demolish Ladies Bridge. Well, if you can imagine Ladies Bridge being practically blocked by tree trunks, dead carcasses, and people alive, the gas lamps fading. Horrible, horrible night. It's one of the biggest disasters ever to happen, natural disasters ever to happen in this country. You know, it's a bit like the Blitz. Some say it's unknown. I'm not so sure I'd go along with that. For the 150th anniversary, you got people coming from America and Australia because they'd lost somebody in the flood. And it's a fascinating story because, as I say, the insights it shows into working conditions, the living conditions of the poor in Victoria and Sheffield, which were abysmal. And, you know, people like me grumble about all the heritage that's gone in this city and elsewhere. But so would you like to go back to the days of earth privies, you know, and drunkenness and no food on the table? You know, no. So, you know, that's a sort of endorsement of progress. Mailing Bridge itself, the name is curious. There's a Malin Stacey down here in the 16th century who owned a bit of land, but we don't know much about him. There's also a story that melum or something like that is an obscure French word for pebbles in a river or a stream that have been polished by the water. But I'd rather go to Malin Stacey. But you see, it's a little part of Sheffield, like Ollerton, and a bit like Wadsley, which I'm a staunch defender of, that's been swallowed up in the great yawning maw of urban Sheffield. And I think, really, if you lose your roots, you lose your connections, you lose yourself, ultimately. And that's why myself and Jenny Lightowler, Mick Drury, Malcolm Nunn, a lot of people have taken an interest in the flood. There's a lot going on in the Locksley Valley. It's not just about the Hetworth thing, which I'm strongly against, like the majority of people around here. Because 300 houses on that site, okay, the site's an ugly scar, and so forth. But 300 houses, the effects of that on local facilities and transport is going to be horrendous. And Locksley's in the green belt. The CPRE are in for it, and the Friends of the Locksley Valley are, you know, up against it. But. You know, this is all part of what we're doing now. I suppose it's part of, I don't know, you could say it's a green earth policy, but, you know, when you've got a few years under your belt, in fact, a few layers under your belt in my case, you think, well, you know, you've got to put something back in this life. You think it's not all about sweeping the past away, and we've done that too much in Sheffield. But it's also about your identity, your locality's identity, because it's a very important word, Nick, now. It's called community. And history and anecdotes about that, that's what builds a community. And community's in danger because we've lost the corner shops, by and large. A lot of the pubs we've lost. Post offices and stuff like that, the places of worship we've lost. Community is a many splendid thing, but it's only a community if people feel involved, and one way of feeling involved is telling the stories of stuff like the Sheffield Flood.